what is your favorite product that you can get at Costco?
So you can get a very large block of Kerrygold Dubliner cheese.
Yeah, I've gotten
like
that
the
before.
Irish cheddar, I believe it is. Or
I think that one, I think the Dubliner is like, it's not even cheddar. It's like more mild than a cheddar.
I like it though, whatever it is. It's kind of hard. It's on the verge of being like a hard cheese. We can still do slices of it.
Yeah, it's like semi-hard, but the flavor is very mild.
Okay, I just added something else to my Costco list now.
Very good.
That's pretty good. What else? There's another one I like from there a lot. Taquitos.
Ooh, yeah.
Big taquito boy.
Me too. They used to have good chicken nuggets. I don't know if they still do. I've forgotten to buy them the last couple times I've been there.
They also have a very good, like, frozen beer battered cod.
Ooh.
Yeah. So
we get the frozen salmon fillets. Very good. Because then I bought them from Aldi one time. Mm-hmm. They are not good at Aldi. Would not recommend. But the Costco ones are really nice. They're big, they're meaty, and they're pink.
So, salmon's been ruined for me for about 6 months. Because I can't, so I'm not going to be able to eat it down here.
Yeah, because you were in Alaska.
Yeah.
And that's where the salmon be.
That's where they live.
That's where they be. They're just walking around the streets. You just see salmon everywhere.
I'm like, sorry about your child, Mr. Salmon, but it was a delightful bagel.
Yeah.
Smoked salmon bagels, man.
Ooh, Becca's a big fan of the smoked salmon. I'm okay. It's the texture of raw meat, stuff like that kind of sketches me out. Even in like sushi, it's not my favorite.
That's fair.
But, you know, I'll eat it. What else? There was one other thing. I mean, the Marg Mix.
I mean,
Hold up. Marg Mix is great.
Not good Costco light beer.
Bad. The paper products, very good. Napkins, toilet paper, paper towels, very
endorsed dog food.
Yeah, that's I very highly couldn't tell you how good it tastes, but they seem to like it.
It's like $35 for like 40 pounds. So if you have two like fat dogs like I do, it's great.
Yeah, we've gotten the cat food there before. I swear there was something else I was going to mention as well.
The gasoline.
Yeah, the gas is good. If you don't mind contending with like everybody in Northwest Ohio, apparently
it's every time you go. Michigan.
But
are we endorsing Costco right now?
Sir, I would endorse Costco any day of the week. I have been buying their generic version of the grass-fed butter instead of the Kerrygold because it's slightly cheaper.
Yeah.
And to me, it still is good. It seems like the butterfat content is still the same and it's nice and yellow.
So. I like yogurt butter. Have you ever had that?
I don't know if I've bought their yogurt.
I don't know about theirs, but I just like it because it's soft. I don't have to like think about it to spread it.
Wait, what?
Like soft butter.
Oh, yeah. It's like the stuff that's like mixed with some canola oil.
Sure, why not?
Yeah. Your big tub of country crock. You know, did you have that growing up?
We did, yeah.
The big gray, ugly tub.
And then if you're at your grandma's house, it might have cookies in it. You never know.
There's either butter or cookies. Either way, I'm happy.
Or sewing supplies.
Less happy.
Yeah, these needles hurt my mouth.
Yeah, they're crunchy. Hello and welcome to We the Sheeple, your bi-weekly podcast guide into the wild and wacky world of conspiracy theories and misinformation. I'm your host, Trent Jones, and with me as always, my co-host, Tom McVeigh.
We're on the way, the convenience stores of Speedway.
Oh, well that was a shift. We didn't get sponsored, Tom. You gotta wait for their product placement. They just got that bacon for free.
Take a Tornado sponsorship from Speedway.
But only for that product, though. Not Speedway generally.
So good.
And then, of course, we have our silent but definitely real producer, Devin.
He screams with the voices of his enemies.
Yes, he is father of salmon. I can't explain it, but he is. Anyway. Tom. I'm going to tell you about something today.
Okay.
And it has to do with the great expanse of oceans. You know, our world, the surface of our planet is what, like 70% ocean?
That sounds true, yeah.
Well, I'm going to talk about a section of it today.
Is the section a certain shape?
You might say it is. This week, we're talking about the Bermuda Triangle. Classic.
Dude, I feel like, much like quicksand, the Bermuda Triangle is something I was very worried about as a child for no apparent reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, and that's one of the funny things, like, I don't know if that's just a product of, like, our childhood, like, it was a fad at the time when we were children, but I, too, remember quicksand and Bermuda Triangle coming up a lot.
It's like, well, I don't have a
super
plan.
Weird, super weird. But first, let's just get out there. What is the Bermuda Triangle, actually? We've probably heard of it a lot, but what actually is it? So, it's a region of the Atlantic Ocean. And southeast of the United States. So, like more south and east than Florida. And typically, it's bounded by drawing a triangle between Miami, Florida, San Juan, Puerto Rico, and the island of Bermuda.
I was going to say, I hope Bermuda's involved.
Yeah, that would be kind of lame if it wasn't, huh? I will mention that, as we kind of talked about in the last episode, the boundaries of it are kind of higgledy-piggledy. They change depending on who's talking about it, but...
And what's convenient to the conspiracy at hand.
Yeah, that's generally, I think, is a safe, you know, the general area is bounded that way. So, the earliest speculation of some sort of mystery disappearances related to this area seems to be a 1950 article in the Miami Herald by Edward Van Winkle Jones.
That's an awesome name. That's
a fantastic name. So, the... article's not very long, so I'm just going to read it verbatim.
Ooh.
Keep in mind, this is the Miami Associated Press writer, so he's, like, not just some dude. Like, this is...
He's not, like, a sheriff from an Alabama town.
Right. All right. It's a small world, no? It's still the same vast globe the ancients knew, with the same misty limbo of the lost. We think it is small because of speeding wheels and wings and the voice of radio which comes out of the void. This is very, like,
he's trying to win a Pulitzer, dude.
Yeah, really. A mile is only a minute's travel by wheel or a few seconds in flight, but it is still a mile. The miles add up to a vast unknown into which 100 and more persons have flown or sailed with brief memory to be swallowed up just as ships were swallowed up in the old sailing days. The Sandra carried radio. It was a 350-foot freighter which sailed with 12 men on board from Miami to Savannah. I'm assuming Savannah, Georgia, but I don't actually know.
Savannah or Havana?
It says Savannah, not Havana. I don't know. There, 300 tons of insecticide were loaded for Puerto Cabello, Venezuela. Hmm. Probably Puerto Cabello, maybe. Hmm. But in any case... The Sandra sailed and disappeared without a trace. On June 16th, in the small world year of 1950, the search was abandoned. The fate of the craft and the dozen on board was written down as an official mystery. Where are the men and women and two babies, 32 persons in all, who happily boarded a plane at San Juan, Puerto Rico, and flew 1,000 miles towards Miami? A radio message at 4 a.m. December 27th, 1948, reported them 50 miles south of their goal. They never arrived. So think of the children, Tom.
For a second, I thought the babies were on the pesticide ship, and I was like, who decided it was a good idea to bring babies on the pesticide boat?
Searchers scanned a 310,000 miles of sea and land, but the elusive limbo into which they flew was on no map. On January 18th, 1949, a great task force of the United States Navy was on maneuver south of Bermuda. The same day, a British airliner, the Ariel, vanished into thin air through which it flew. The plane had left Bermuda with 20 persons on board on its way from London to Chile. I guess that makes sense. Bermuda would be a stop on the way.
Yeah.
The naval force abandoned its maneuvers. Aircraft carriers, cruisers, destroyers combed the waters with thousands of pairs of sharp eyes on watch. They found no hint of the Ariel's fate. A year earlier, on January 31st, 1948, another British plane, the Star Tiger, great name, very like colonial British, I feel, approached Bermuda with 29 on board. The craft radioed its position several times, then silence enveloped it. In the mystery, to this day, no trace has been uncovered.
I'm mystified.
And we're not done yet. An older, but more perplexing mystery is that of the five torpedo planes. They took off from the Navy's Fort Lauderdale Air Station on December 5th, 1945, for navigational training flight. The hours passed and darkness fell. Anxious officers called to them by radio and were answered only by silence. The hour passed when their fuel would have been exhausted and search planes were sent out. Among the searchers was a big, lumbering rescue craft, a PBM, I don't know what that is, with 13 men on board.
I believe it's a large lumbering rescue craft.
None of the five torpedo planes with the 14 crewmen were found despite the greatest search in Florida's history. Nor did the PBM craft ever return. These and other modern mysteries have established a roll of about 135 persons who went forth confidently into a world they thought small. But it is the same big world the ancients knew, into which men and their machines and ships can disappear without a trace.
I feel like this dude's like parents wanted him to be a novelist, and he went to journalism school, and he's trying to prove them wrong that journalism can be literature too or something.
I feel like I've read a couple other articles, like news articles from the time, and it does seem like that's more the style. Yeah, it's too. Like a little bit more of a prose-centered, like...
I know, given that it's, like, we'll remove the veil for a second, the first day of college football season, like, Alabama's the Crimson Tide, right? Mm-hmm. And it's because some sports writer was like, they took the field like a tide of crimson, overtaking the enemy. Like, it was all that kind of crap.
Isn't their mascot like an elephant, too?
For some reason. They're going to destroy Texas today.
Texas ain't no good, right?
Not really.
But in any case, that's the article. Very short. They also drew a little map here. Ooh. Of the region that we're kind of talking about. And you can see how it's like kind of a short trip to making this triangle, because it kind of draws a... It draws... If you just drew the lines between some of the locations where these planes took off from, you get the triangle.
Is that the map we tweeted out, or is this a different map?
Yeah, that would be the map we tweeted out. Should have been. Cuba! Yeah, Cuba's in there. Yeah.
So go to our Twitter if you want to see the map.
Heck yeah. So that was the first, like I said, article. He didn't, obviously, coin the term Bermuda Triangle. But several more articles would be written in subsequent years following that one. One of these articles, The Deadly Bermuda Triangle, written by Vincent Gaddis in 1964 and published in the pulp magazine Argosy, first laid out a specific triangle, the Miami, San Juan, and Bermuda Triangle. And obviously, I don't know if he coined the term, but he's using it there. Like I said, the boundaries can vary widely depending on who's drawing, ranging in size from a total area of 500,000 square miles to 1.5 million square miles. So this is a huge area.
It's a large area and a large range.
A large area of nothing. Open ocean, I might add, with hardly nothing in it. All right. So let's talk about some of these mysterious incidents. So according to the 1974 book, The Bermuda Triangle, by Charles Berlitz, I don't know, more than 100 planes and ships have literally vanished into thin air, most of them since 1945, and more than 1,000 lives have been lost in the past 26 years, without a single body or piece of wreckage having been found. We're going to hear more from him, right now and then again later. But he goes on to say, quote, many of the planes concerned have vanished while in normal radio contact with their base or terminal destination until the very moment of their disappearance, while others have radioed the most extraordinary messages, implying that they could not get their instruments to function, that their compasses were spinning, that the sky had turned yellow and hazy on a clear day, and that the ocean, which was calm nearby, didn't look right, without further clarification of what was wrong. Bum, bum, bum. Dun, dun, dun. All right, some specific instances. We go all the way back to 1492. Tom, what happened in 1492?
Columbus genocided the natives.
Perfect. So yes, the first one being Christopher Columbus. And his crew of the Santa Maria reported seeing unknown lights one day before landing in Guanahani.
You have the word in front of you. I can't see it. I can't
pronounce it, but somewhere in the Caribbean, because that's where he first landed, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And then both intentionally and unintentionally committed genocide. So then, again, we'll jump forward a little bit to 1880. The sail training ship ate Her Majesty's ship. It's like Atlanta with an extra A. So I think it's Atalanta.
Also probably committing genocide.
Yeah. And yeah. Oh, I lost my place. Oh, it was originally named Her Majesty's ship Juno. Disappeared with her entire crew after setting sail from Royal Navy Dockyard, Bermuda, for Falmouth? Yeah, England, on January 31st, 1880.
Given that it's England, it's probably pronounced stupid, like Falmenhamen.
Abidupahata.
England's dumb.
Swiggledy, piggledy.
Hot take. Piggledy. British people.
Yeah. How insensitive, Tom, on the week of Her Majesty's death.
Who cares?
Then we jump to 1918. The USS Cyclops. Great name.
For a ship. That's how you name a boat, British people.
So it was a collier, which I knew this, of course, but I'll just define it all of you cretins. A bulk cargo ship used to transport materials such as coal or ore departed the island of Barbados loaded full with manganese ore. It disappeared without a trace, dooming all 309 crew members. It was the largest loss of life in a non-combat scenario in U.S. naval history. And if you ignore the fact that one of its engines was broken when it left, it seems pretty mysterious.
I mean, I can ignore a lot of facts, so.
All right, then we jump to 1945. During a U.S. Navy training flight, this is the one the guy was talking about in the article.
Okay.
During a U.S. Navy training flight called Flight 19, five TBM Avenger torpedo bombers disappeared. So they were, I think, small planes. They took off from Fort Lauderdale and were supposed to fly in a roughly 354-mile loop. They didn't return, and a rescue mission was launched once it became clear that the planes would have run out of fuel. So they waited, and then they're like, uh-oh, gotta go find them. Then, during this rescue mission, one of the rescue planes, a PBM Mariner with a 13-man crew, also disappeared.
That's the large thing.
Yeah, the large lumbering plane the guy was talking about. Okay. 1967, December 22nd, Miami hotel owner and yachtsman Dan Burek set out on his cabin cruiser Witchcraft with a priest named Patrick Horgan. It sounds like the setup to a joke. a businessman and a priest go out on a boat.
Witchcraft.
The ship was taken 1 mile off the Miami coastline so that they could view the Christmas lights visible on the shoreline. That night, Burek radioed a distress call to the Coast Guard, informing him that his boat's propeller had struck something underwater and that he needed to be towed in. The Coast Guard requested that he send up a flare roughly 20 minutes after so that they could find him. The official who received the call reportedly later noted that Burek did not seem too concerned about the Witchcraft. A boat that Burek had fitted with special flotation device at its hull. I'm just picturing like a big like life raft around the entire.
I feel like his mistake was underestimating Witchcraft. He should always be concerned.
Yeah, God was taking out his raft. He said, how dare you, priest, go on a boat named Witchcraft? When the Coast Guard arrived at the location from which Burek called, he, Horgan, and the Witchcraft were nowhere to be found. Over the following days, a search was conducted over hundreds of square miles of ocean, but the boat and its passengers were not able to be located.
So no flotation device.
Like Witchcraft.
Sorry, Hulk Hogan.
That's his brother.
R.I.P.
And then we'll jump to a pretty recent one. A night in 2017.
That's way more recent than I thought you were going to say.
Yeah. May 15th, a private jet with the catchy name MU-2B... aircraft was at 24,000 feet when it vanished from radio and radar contact with air traffic controllers in Miami. Plane wreckage was later found, but no explanation.
I mean, it probably crashed.
It does sound like it, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. So those are just some of them. There's, you know, depending, like I said, who's drawing the boundary and who's doing the research, there can be as many as hundreds of disappearances that have happened in the Bermuda Triangle.
Right.
So, let's talk about some of the non-paranormal explanations that people have tried to float forward. Okay,
I'm ready.
So, one is trying to answer the question of the goofy compasses, right? We heard that in some of the stories that people reported the compasses freaking out all of a sudden.
Going haywire.
Yeah. Yeah, so many of these vessels indicate that they had experienced some type of error with their navigational devices. This has led some to theorize that there is some sort of magnetic anomaly in the area.
I feel that'd be easy to test.
You would think. Apparently, magnetic compasses naturally have some variation over particularly large distances, because I guess, you know, magnetic pole is different than true north pole.
Sure.
So I've been told.
Magnets, how do they work?
Yeah. So even if the compasses changed, you know, as is indicated in some of the reports, these incidents likely wouldn't have been suspicious, and maybe the people just weren't experienced enough to figure that out. So that's one explanation. Then there's the Gulf Stream. So there's a very strong ocean current in this that flows through this area known as the Gulf Stream. So if a boat or a aircraft loses power and is just adrift in the ocean, it can be as fast as like 5 meters a second. So you get like pushed. So you could quickly drift away from where you reported being missing. And at that point,
the ocean's pretty big.
Yeah. They're not going to, like we said, it's like 1 million square miles. They're probably not going to find you. Then this one is really interesting. What do you know of methane hydrates?
You might think, because I work in a chemistry lab, I know a lot. I don't know what that is.
Okay. So
hydrogen is involved in.
Sure. So a group of researchers in Australia proved that bubbles can sink a ship by decreasing the density of the water surrounding it, thus decreasing the buoyancy that the water provides, sinking the ship. For those who have forgotten their like second grade science class, boats float by displacing water. As long as the weight of the water you're displacing is less than the, you know, weight of the ship you're trying to float on it, then you float, because there's enough buoyant force of that water trying to refill the space that you're displacing it from that you float.
So the bubbles make like a pocket of water, and then...
Exactly. So the bubbles decrease the density, you know, the overall density of the water less that you're water. Displacing, so you get less buoyance force pushing you back up out of the water, which then screws the pooch, because you've designed this boat in a very specific way to make it float, and you then can sink.
So really, engineers are the enemy of this story.
Engineers who didn't think about bubbles, I guess.
I always think about bubbles.
So it is theorized that some ships could have gone missing and sunk by naturally occurring fields of methane hydrates, a type of natural gas, on continental shelves.
Oh, there's like gas vents at the bottom. Or
that's
whatever.
What people are saying, that all of a sudden these big fields of bubbles just pop up, and then
it's like a fun down. Way to die.
Yeah.
Death by bubbles.
It's unique.
Yeah. Silly.
And like I said, basically the result of that would be the ship all of a sudden loses buoyancy and sinks completely without warning, and no mechanical failures or anything. But the U.S. Geological Survey doesn't believe any such large, you know, scale gas releases have occurred in the Bermuda Triangle area in the past 15,000 years.
Well, what do they know?
Yeah, what do they know? I'm the expert. I did my research. It's also noting that some people just throw out there that harsh weather and good old human error can also be contributors to disappearing.
Little confirmation bias, maybe?
Perhaps. But that's no fun, Tom. It's not fun. Let's talk about what's really going on here.
Well, bubbles are fun.
The paranormal and the conspiracy explanations.
Aliens?
But first, let's hear from our advertisers.
Yeah, shilling our
corner. Time. Let's go. Such enlightening offers from our advertisers.
Yeah, if they were a triangle of the ocean, I wouldn't be mad about getting lost in those offers.
Certainly not.
That was dumb.
I liked it.
Thank you.
Well, and anyway, Tom, so let's get back.
Let's talk about the death of hundreds, if not thousands, of people via triangles.
To our mysterious corner of the ocean. Corner's a bit rich because it's pretty large.
But it's flat, so it has a corner.
I guess so. So let's talk about some of the more paranormal or conspiratorial explanations.
Those are two of my favorite kind of explanations.
So I'm going to lean pretty heavily into this book called The Bermuda Triangle by the guy I was talking about earlier from 1974.
Happily named.
So how about this chapter, or this section from a chapter titled Time-Space Warps and Other Worlds?
I love it.
Pretty grounded title, I think. Quote, the presence of one or more other areas of disappearance in the world's oceans has led to some unusual speculations. Theories concerning anti-gravity warps have been advanced, presupposing areas where the laws of gravity and normal magnetic attraction no longer function in ways with which we are familiar. Then, we'll skip ahead a little bit, an incident involving time lapse occurred at a Miami airport about 5 years ago, which has never been satisfactorily explained. A concerned National Airlines 272 passenger plane, or I'm sorry, it concerned a National Airlines 727 passenger plane, which, on approach to landing from the northeast and being tracked on radar by Air Control Center, I guess that's a different way to say air traffic control, suddenly disappeared from the radar screen for about 10 minutes, only to reappear.
Hmm.
The plane landed without incident, and the pilot and crew evinced, I've never heard that, I'm assuming that means expressed, some surprise over the expressed concern of the ground crew, since, as far as the crew was concerned, nothing unusual had happened.
Weird.
By way of an explanation of one of the air control staff, said to one of the pilots, man, for 10 minutes you just did not exist. It was at this point that the crew checked their watches and various time indicators in the plane and discovered that they were uniformly 10 minutes slow according to real time. Dun, dun, dun. It was remarkable as the plane had made a routine time check about 20 minutes before the incident, and at that time there was no discrepancy.
So, remind me, the fellow who wrote this book, does he believe in these conspiracies, or is he calling balls and strikes?
He's impartial. He's a believer. I just wanted to say that
because I'm like, right now it sounds like he's just saying this is what some people think, but I didn't know if he was like.
You can also find this book for free on the Internet Archive if you wanted to read it. I think it's like 200 pages or
something. Gotta make any more book report offers. So,
you'll notice that is suspiciously lacking in any detail whatsoever as to a specific time, date, flight number, when that occurred. So
I didn't notice that. I just got caught up in 10 minutes disappearing.
Take that as you will.
I believe it.
Until
the Nazis come in.
Yeah, so basically he's saying that he's kind of promoting that theory we talked about before where there's some strange magnetic time-space anomalies in that area.
Wormholes and such.
Yeah, wormholes and such. And as evidence, he takes that, you know.
Definitely not
compasses
anecdote.
Stop working, yeah. And not that strange anecdote we just talked about where the 10 minutes were missing. So, he then elaborates later on that perhaps the magnetic anomalies are actually caused by UFOs when they warp.
Yes.
Short jump, I think.
Pre or post dropping cows?
That's a great, maybe. Okay. Here's where we're, our unified theory. They pop out of the Bermuda Triangle, zip on over to Nebraska or wherever they're going to steal a cow from, pick it up, take the organs, I guess, drop it, zip back on over to Bermuda to teleport back to their plane.
See, I was thinking sometimes they like forget to drop the cow in the field and they're like, oh darn. So they just drop it in the ocean and the velocity of the cow capsizes the boat below.
Oh, they just...
The Bermuda Triangle is actually a dump for aliens.
Nice. Okay, so we're going to read... Oh, sorry. I don't know why I'm yawning. This is so thrilling. We're just getting to the UFOs.
And we've drank a lot of caffeine.
We did. Okay, this is a quote trying to explain these UFOs. I think he was actually interviewing a different guy, but it doesn't matter. He included it in his book, so he believes it too. And when he says he's referring to M.K. Jessup, a writer on UFOs.
Great name.
Had a theory that the power of magnetic fields could transform and transport matter from one dimension to another. That UFOs could come into our dimension and get out again, taking humans or other samples, perhaps cow organs, with them. He further thought that some of the incidents were caused by the UFO's cathode rays creating a vacuum which disintegrated planes when they entered this field. The UFOs, whatever they are, seem to create a temporary magnetic vortex, an ionization pattern that can cause ships and planes to disintegrate or disappear. Jessup, before he died, believed that he was on the verge of discovering the scientific basis for whatever was happening, which he considered explainable according to Einstein's unified field theory. They do go on to talk about that, because I think ostensibly that guy committed suicide, but then they go on to talk about, like, do you think he committed suicide? I didn't have time to read that section, but
yeah, too close to the truth, man.
Yeah, I saw the question.
That's funny.
But as is typical, they really hit you with the jargon.
What does it say that we can just make dumb jokes and it's like, no, actually, yeah, that's the next part. Like,
yeah. That they're predictable and funny?
Or we've done this too much.
We have done this a lot. This particular guy, obviously we hit the aliens part. He's also big into Atlantis.
Nice.
And he thinks that the Bermuda Triangle is where it was located, either in part or in whole. From what I could tell from his perspective, Atlantis was probably multiple. It was like an empire spanning the entire, like, Atlantic.
Okay, because I was going to shoot down my theory of, like, yes, because whatever, Plato or Aristotle would be very aware of Bermuda.
Well, because he brought that up. He was like, oh, the Plato texts say that it was out in the Atlantic somewhere. He's like, but maybe Plato only knew of the one part.
He got me.
And there was the other side. Because then he was also talking about some, like, Central and South American cultures that had some tales that he tied together to be Atlantis.
He thought about this.
He has a big trustees in his book, like a very large portion of it is. He's a big fan of Atlantis. We'll just put it that way.
Did you read the whole book or just parts of it?
I skimmed to find what I needed.
That's awesome.
If I would have found it early enough, I probably, again, if we were full-time podcasters, Tom, I would have read this whole ding dang book, but I didn't. So like I said, big into Atlantis. He works in a bunch of readings from a psychic in the 1940s named Edgar Cayce, who apparently this guy, I think he was like active from the 1920s to the 1940s, and he would like go into a trance and I think just start describing all these things that he's seeing. So again, that guy was big into Atlantis too.
And this book was written in the...
1974, I believe.
So we're going with secondhand information from a psychic from the 20s is one of his sources?
Yeah, the 20s to the 40s, okay, Tom. Sorry.
30 to 50-year-old secondhand psychic information. Okay, just wanted to...
From his trances.
Just wanted to get that in clear the air, you know?
So I'm going to read you a quote.
Is it from the psychic?
I can't remember. I think it's... No, it's not from the psychic. Darn. Okay. However, through the misuse of natural forces they had developed, he's talking about the Atlanteans, and through civil and external strife, the Atlanteans eventually unleashed uncontrollable forces of nature, which caused their own destruction. Generally shared in common by Cayce and the legends of many older cultures of the world. I think he's probably taking like the flood narratives and to mean that.
Makes a little like Icarus in there, flying too close to the sun with technology.
I think it's basically not ancient aliens, but like the trope of like an ancient, super technologically advanced society. Kind of, have you ever seen the animated movie Atlantis?
Yeah, I love that movie.
It's a great movie. I think it's basically this.
It's a great movie.
Where they have like the magic crystals and flying stuff. Yeah. But for some reason, they're not using it when the white people get there. So
who knows, man? Who knows? 10 out of 10. Better movie than Avatar.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why I linked them in my mind. This is better.
They are kind of
similar tropes. Yeah. Road to El Dorado, also a great movie. DreamWorks had some bangers. Seen that. Was Atlantic? Was that DreamWorks or Disney?
I think it was DreamWorks, but it might be. It might have been a dual.
Carry on. I'm going to Google this though.
Okay, you figure that out. So yeah, big into Atlantis, big into that whole thing. Again, as we've witnessed with many times with these kind of conspiracies, they all kind of get meshed on top of each other. They all explain each other.
It was a Disney joint. Mm. Also, 49% on Rotten Tomatoes. What? I disagree.
Maybe I have to. I like the Mole Man. You remember the French Mole Man with his dirt?
Like, hopefully. I didn't know Michael J. Fox was in it.
Huh. Who's he the voice of? The main guy?
Milo James.
Yeah, I think Milo's like the main guy.
I haven't watched it in a long time. Maybe I'm just nostalgia blind, but I feel like it was pretty good.
I remember it being good when I was a kid. I guess we'll have to watch it.
Yeah, movie night.
Okay. So another fun explanation is that the Bermuda Triangle is prone to overlapping with another parallel universe.
Okay, yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Classic. So this is a quote. Where did I pull this from? Oh, this is from a different article, not the same book.
That is 10 minutes behind our own. Dun,
dun, dun. In the Bermuda Triangle, and in other spots less well known, a parallel universe becomes confused with your universe so that there exists between them a natural warp. People, animals, and even objects finding themselves in the immediate vicinity of a warp are literally sucked into it.
Not figuratively, literally.
Literally. Thus, you can have, for example, an entire fleet of boats disappear in several seconds. Sometimes a person or persons can pass back into your universe after several hours, several days, or several years. More often, however, they never return. Mm. When a man does return and relates his experience, the vast majority of people don't believe him. And if he
wonder why.
And if he persists, he is assumed crazy. Most of the time, such a person recounts nothing at all, realizing how he will appear in the eyes of his peers. Sometimes, too, he returns, quote, amnesic, and if he recovers some memory, it is not of what happened in the parallel universe, and therefore sheds no light on the subject. So really, no answers in that little section of the article.
Sounds like human social constructs is keeping the secret from us.
It does sound like that, just a little bit.
Should be more open-minded, sheeple.
Mm-hmm. So those are, there's obviously a ton of different conspiracies as with mm-hmm. all of them. So, you know, those are the big ones I found.
I like them.
Now let's look back at it with some critical eyes. I'll say, pretty quickly after all these big, you know, sensationalized, like, you know, mythos started developing around the Bermuda Triangle, mm-hmm. just as quickly people were like shooting it down. So I think not too long after 1974, like, people were making TV specials or writing articles and writing books about why, mm-hmm. debunking it, basically. So let's point out some of the many people that have, you know, researched the Bermuda Triangle. Let's point out some of their main points as to why, you know, it's not true. So, first off, some of the debunkers, I'll say, claim that the research that is done by many conspiracists is full of errors and inconsistencies.
What?
I know.
Not my conspiracists.
How rude. They claim that the conspiracists often misrepresent outside circumstances, like the weather at the time of the incidents. They, you know, kind of ignore other pieces of information that are useful, you know, and important to these disappearances. They sometimes even conflated or fabricated details about incidents.
Never.
They will take incidents that didn't even occur, you know, in the Bermuda Triangle and just kind of copy paste them and slap them in there, whether in, you know, maliciously or just, you know, not being good researchers. Who knows, but
have we talked about the movie, like, Behind the Curve? Have you seen that?
Yeah, that's the Netflix documentary, right?
Yeah.
That's a great viewing experience.
I'm sure we've talked about it at some point. It's funny. Like, the flat earther guy, like, does an experiment that's like, well, if these results are right, it would mean the Earth's round. So I must have miscalculated.
In that, yeah, because there was, they talked to one guy who did a really, really sophisticated experiment with like a navigational, like a really expensive like gyroscope that they use in like to navigate commercial planes. And they basically said, okay, we're going to set this in a Faraday cage. We set up this whole experiment so we know that this thing is going to be right. And they said, if this gyroscope reads a however many 15 and a whatever degree, you know, drift over into an hour, they calculated like if the Earth is round and it rotates as it's told to have been rotating, what will be the drift? If we see this number, then we'll know that the Earth is round. They get literally that exact number and they go, oh, well, something must be wrong. So we want to redo this experiment at some point. And then it ends with another similar thing, a less sophisticated experiment that they prove that there's the curvature of the Earth. And they go, I think something was wrong.
I love it.
And that's how they end the, that's how they end the documentary. Great. I can't recommend that one enough. It's really good to kind of get in the mindset and understand why these things gain a foothold.
Yeah, it's a good one. Very good. Sorry for sidetracking.
No, that is very good. So like we said, they conflate or fabricate details, sometimes confirmation bias kind of stuff, where they only take the pieces and parts of a story that, you know, apply and support their thesis, I guess I'll say.
Evidence, if we use the word evidence loosely.
Yeah, very loosely. And again, most of these are, you know, second, third hand accounts from the 1950s. So you're like, did it happen? Did it not?
Who knows? Get the psychic on the case.
Yeah, get the psychic on the case. And the rather loose definition and of the boundaries kind of allow for a pretty generous hand to be used in determining what it did happen in the Bermuda Triangle and what didn't. So again, you can kind of just confirmation bias weave together all these different parts that suits your narrative. Then some of the more like practical reasons why this, there's really no mystery. That part of the world just has naturally pretty severe weather. You know, people who may not be from America might not know this, but that's where hurricanes develop before they strike, you know, the southern coast of the United States. You just have severe storms. It's wide open ocean. There ain't nothing there in the Bermuda Triangle. So, you know, if you get hit by a storm, especially before like advanced, you know, sophisticated radar and everything, you just disappear and nobody ever hears from you again.
Did you notice or read anything about like, is there like less disappearances as time goes on because we get better tech?
Yeah, I was going to talk about that. It seems like there are less mysterious disappearances that occur now, at least there were less in the list.
GPS and such.
That's what I was talking about. It seems like they kind of coincide with the advent of better planes, better boats, better GPS, better technology generally. Makes it more difficult to just disappear without a trace.
It's like how we have never got like a high quality video of a UFO or a Bigfoot now that we all have phones and cameras that are good.
Right. Doesn't make sense.
Odd, right?
So there's that. And then this is probably the biggest single nail in the coffin for the whole thing. That part of the world just has a lot of boat and plane traffic. It's very highly traveled.
Right.
I would assume that's kind of how you go if you wanted to get to the Panama Canal and you were going to, you know, go all the way around.
Sure.
To the Pacific Ocean. I'd assume you'd have to go through there.
Right. Gulf of Mexico. And there's places to stop if you need to.
Right.
Fuel up or something. I don't know how much fuel boats have. I don't know how boats work.
Neither.
Bubbles are their enemy.
I guess so. The number of accidents, when you look at it, is pretty insignificant when you compare the overall traffic and compared to other parts of the world that are just large swaths of open ocean.
Similar incident per capita or whatever.
Right, right. So that's what I got.
That was fun.
Wasn't that fun?
I liked it.
I liked it too.
Want to go get a little dinghy and travel the Panama Bermuda Canal Triangle?
Oh my gosh, what? Did you have a stroke? What happened?
No, I just forgot what we're talking
about. Be when we're rich podcasters. We'll do a special episode where we sail through the Bermuda Triangle.
We'll call it the SS Devon.
SS Devon. We'll ride atop Devon. Yeah. He'll be a transformer.
He'll protect us.
He'll protect us.
With his warm embrace.
Devin can actually sense the dimensional warps and rifts.
Yeah, he's pretty useful.
Save us. Yeah. And I think he says his knees kind of hurt when the storm is coming. So
relatable.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. Did you have fun, Tom?
I always have fun, Trent.
Well, you'll love to hear it. Follow us on Twitter. We have one of those.
We the Sheeple Pod.
We the Sheeple Pod. You would have been clued in that we might be talking about the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, I sent out another tweet while we were recording this even.
Wow.
Yeah.
Multitasking at its finest.
It really is.
We also have an email address. If you just want to shoot something out to us, if you want to, you know, give us praise, perhaps. If you want to say, hey, you guys are bad at this, we'll take that as too. Suggestions of things we could do better. Suggestions for future episode topics you'd like to hear us talk about.
Navigational charts to the lost city of Atlantis.
Yeah, tell us about how you navigate on a flight. I'd love to hear it. If you have a perhaps spare sextant, you could email us about that.
Email it to us.
Yeah, maybe I'll give you a P.O. box to send it to. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. If you hated this episode, tell your enemies and waste their time. If you liked this episode, tell your friends.
And tell your enemies. Maybe they'll like you more.
Oh, that's what I like to hear, Tom.
We can build bridges.
Yeah, be a bridge builder, not a bridge burner.
Let us heal the relationships in your life.
That's our core competency here at We the Sheeple.
Only we can save you.
Only we can save your relationships. But yeah.
Rate us on your pod stuff.
On your podcast listening platform of choice. I know Spotify has like comments and reviews now.
Yeah.
So leave us one of those. Anything else, Tom?
No, I'm just still debating what to get for lunch.
Yeah, what are you gonna get?
I don't know yet. We'll find out.
Well, pray for our friend Tom and his lunchtime decision, even though he'll have made it long before this episode.
Probably like a month.
And I suppose, thank you all for listening. And until next time, wake up, sheeple.
Wake up.